Blog Talk Radio.
Mama Africa, Mama Africa, am I coming home, hello Mama Africa, how are you, I'm feeling fine, and I hope you're fine too, hello Mama Africa, how are you, I hope when you hear these words, you're great.
Of Your World News as we kick off our inaugural episode of the year 2010. And as we know our history, we can thank the 365-day calendar to the ancient Cretans, otherwise known as the ancient Egyptians. You know, going back well over 4,000 years ago, it was their continued ingenuity and genius that modeled, you know, the 365-day. We can thank them for the second, the minute, the hour, the day, the month, and so forth. And I'm your host, Solomon Kamajan, and welcome to another edition of Your World News. We've got a great episode today, and I hope that you and yours have a wonderful, prosperous New Year's in struggle. You know, there are a ton of struggles that we still continue to have to fight on various fronts, and if these if these battles are not continued, you know, on the grassroots levels and on various fronts, you know, it makes us, it makes it that much more difficult. What I'm trying to say, it makes it that much more difficult. And so we have to continue to trudge on. And so I'm yours in solidarity. And as they say, aluta continua. And speaking of struggle, we're going to have three great guests with us today, two young student youth leaders, relatively young student leaders. They're student leaders on their respective campuses. We're going to be joined by a gentleman by the name of Jazz Lewis, and he is at University of Maryland's College Park campus in the state of Maryland, and obviously, and we'll be joined by Janelle Brown, who is the a student leader, a very strong student leader on the campus of Georgetown University in Washington, D.C., and she is the president of the Black Student Union there. And we'll also be joined by Malik Zulu Shabazz, who not only is an attorney, but he's also the chairman, the national chairman for the new Black Panther Party. So we'll be joined by those three guests on the other end of this story. So I want to kick everything off. I want to set the table right now with Brother Glenn Ford, who did a piece a couple months ago that is very apropos for this this specific edition of Your World News. And so I'm going to play the clip right now, and when we return, we'll be joined by the three guests that I just mentioned. And like I said, we're going to have a very spirited conversation about that battle, about those various battles that need to be waged on various fronts so that we have a chance to win. To win this ongoing war on things such as Black studies, Black culture departments, diversity, the gains that have been made by that have been made by affirmative action, the gains that still need to be made in order for this country, United States of America, to be the level playing field that so many people call it. Because right now, it's still, we're in very much in a current racist society. It's not a post-racist, it's not a post-racial anything. There's racial inequity and structural and institutional racism and white supremacy in every corner of American society. So anyway, so I'm going to play this clip by Brother Gillian Ford, and at the other end, we'll start the show.
In 1968, the Black Student Union at San Francisco State University, in conjunction with other activists and faculty, demanded the establishment of a Black Studies program. The next year, the Black Studies program became a department. 40 years later, as many as 350 colleges and universities offer majors, minors, and degrees in Black, African American, Africana, and related studies, according to Dr. James Turner of Cornell University's Africana Studies and Research Center. Just like the movement and politics that it sprang from, Black Studies is under assault as irrelevant in today's times. The truth is, Black Studies has always been in conflict with the powers that be, on campus and in the wider world. It was born that way, out of a movement and a people that were trying to find a way out of their own oppression and the ills afflicting humanity at large. Only fools and the enemy can claim that this mission has been accomplished, and that Black voices should stand down in academia or anywhere else. Black Studies grew out of Black activism, and when the discipline is done well, it leads to greater and more effective activism, while deepening our understanding of the global society. This is, by definition, dangerous to those who profit from the status quo and the lies that prop up privilege. Those who have achieved power and inherited privilege through systemic racial oppression are the last ones to want to fund a discipline that examines past and present oppression. Naturally, opponents of Black Studies have always tried to marginalize it as a kind of special dispensation unworthy of accreditation and resources. In the age of Obama, hostile forces proclaim Black Studies to be an obstacle on the road to race neutrality, another way of saying that those who illuminate and struggle against a problem are themselves the source of the problem. In a society that is truly committed to social justice, Black Studies would be viewed in much the same way as the study of medicine, whose ultimate purpose is to promote the health of human beings and to combat the diseases that plague us. Medicine ameliorates human misery and seeks ways to make possible the maximum fulfillment of life for the greatest number of people. So does the struggle for social justice and its academic arm, Black Studies. Black Studies provides a unique prism through which to identify that which ails us in the United States and beyond. When Black Studies is devalued, Black people are devalued, and all of humanity is diminished. Those who think we are already liberated and can now dispense with Black Studies are the ones most in need of an education. For Black Agenda Radio, I'm Glenn Ford. On the web, go to www.blackagendareport.com.
So as you can see, that is Brother Glenn Ford. That piece really set the table for our discussion for the next 50 minutes, 5-0. And I'd like to really start off the dialogue by having each one of our guests, briefly introduce themselves and open up with a comment in terms of how this relates to what's going on their respective campuses. And in the case of Brother Malik Zulu Shabazz, I think he brings a unique perspective as an attorney and also as the national chairman for the Black Panther Party. So I'll start with Jazz Lewis, who is a student leader on the campus of University of Maryland. Jazz, can you introduce yourself and kind of talk about how this relates to you and the struggle that, if you can give us a brief backdrop about what's going on your campus, the campus of University of Maryland College Park, and what struggle you're engaged in right now that's related to, the topic of the day.
Good morning, Solomon. Yes, I'm a junior government politics major at the University of Maryland. I'm the public relations chair of a student activist-based group called Community Roots, and at University of Maryland, what is not going on? For one thing, our associate provost for diversity and equity, Dr. Cordell Black, decided to terminate his position because he opposes the status quo in administration, so they're forcing him out. And the departments that report to him is NIMBRU, which is our cultural center, this organization called OMSI, which is a tutoring center for students of color, and LGBT Equity, which is like a center for LGBTQI-affiliated people to go and feel at home. That thing, a number of professors, primarily women and people of color, are being forced out for, like, their different views. There's no way to move up in regards of, like, administration to get tenure so that you are safe. A prime example is that I have a professor. Her name is Professor Grant Wisdom. She's a black woman. She's Jamaican. And all the journals she puts out in regards of unraveling the effects of globalization in the Caribbean and South America in particular are in Caribbean journals because, you know, people in North America really don't care about that stuff. And because she does that, they try not to give her any credit because it doesn't go into the typical, you know, Oxford review that they don't think it holds any value or any prestige. So that's another thing that plays in regards. Man, school is just tearing up, really. Students have no voice. It's focusing primarily on diversity. This freshman year, black enrollment went down 30%. They say that this is because of finance and whatnot, but we have no way to trail, at least as of yet, you know, the number of people that are actually actively going towards in regards to applying to the school and who they're enrolling and not. But thanks for having me, Simon.
Thank you. Thank you, and we'll definitely revisit that. Thanks, that's a great introduction. And I want to go to the second student leader before we move on to Malik Zula Shabazz. We're going to Janelle Brown, who is a student at Georgetown University and also the president of BSU. Janelle, can you tell us what's going on your campus? I believe there was a recent episode there that you guys are dealing with, but from what I've read, you know, the past couple of years, I see that that's, you know, racism and these type of attacks on black students have become commonplace on Georgetown's campus. Can you elaborate?
Yeah, sure. And just one quick correction: I'm actually the president of Georgetown's chapter of the NAACP. So yeah, but yeah, I'll definitely talk about a recent incident that we had. The Georgetown Heckler, which is basically a humorous satirical magazine that is not actually funded by our tuition dollars like, you know, the Hoya or one of our, actually associated with the university. But it's basically a news magazine that is run by Georgetown students. And there was a satirical article that was titled The Hoya Holds Annual Holiday Cross-Lighting Ceremony in Dahlgren Quad. And basically the point of the article was to poke fun at the Hoya, which earlier in the year, last school year, was under a lot of controversy because of a satirical edition for April Fool's that was sort of labeled as racist and sexist, homophobic, and other basically iterations of bigotry because it was just of poor taste. So they're poking fun at the Hoya because, you know, they're under a lot of controversy. But so in this article called The Hoya Holds Annual Holiday Cross-Lighting Ceremony in Dahlgren Quad, there's a picture, I'm sure you could have pulled it off of Google, of actual Ku Klux Klan members burning a cross from back in the day. And there's, you can see that there's an attempt to be satirical, but for most people that read it, you can see that they've gone too far. Of course, this is satire, but it went way too far. One of the lines is, in addition to the cross lighting, the Hoya drove the idea home by hanging dark human-shaped pinatas from Dahlgren's trees representing the demons of the past. So essentially poking fun at, you know, the Hoya for being racist, but sort of using imagery that to a lot of people is really hurtful. and also in poor taste. So in the wake of that, there was a press release drafted by some of my friends, and we had a forum during finals about, you know, how the publication went too far. And since that was during finals, it's kind of too soon to see kind of how it's affected the campus community and how, like, what the rhetoric will be and the sort of climate will be around it. But a lot of people like myself and my friends have come under fire for speaking out. And then a lot of people are saying, ha, isn't it ironic that even though the heckler is trying to poke fun at people who are called racist, that a lot of students are getting angered. So essentially people think that anytime people want to get mad, you know, not for a good reason. So, yeah, just a lot of bad dialogue and not people trying to come to any sort of understanding about people that are angered by things that we see as wrong. So that's sort of the climate that people like myself have been dealing with at Georgetown. I'm a senior. I've been here for 3.5 years. And so so just around issues like that, it's sort of, you know, a very hostile environment, I personally would say. So, yeah.
Thank you for that explanation. And that's kind of like a microcosm of American society in and of itself. The last thing you said, that people are not trying to understand why, you know, black students would be angered and upset about that kind of so-called satire, which, you know, doesn't warrant any kind of humor, you know, except for those who are inherently racist anyways. But that's kind of like the microcosm of life in the U.S. for black folks, is that, you know, folks of European ancestry that make up the large part of this population, by and large, it's a society based around, you know, that everything is based around the Eurocentric perspective. And so, you know, this, you know, even though, you know, your folks have been oppressed for, you know, hundreds of years, you know, you have to grin and bear with it, you know, because, and you know, if you complain, as you were saying, Janelle, then you become, you know, you're labeled as the one that, you know, doesn't have a sense of humor. You're, you know, being, you know, too PC,
yeah,
those type of things. And so we'll get into that, because I know that you've also received some kind of, you know, a lot of heat, you know, centered around your activism, your speaking out. And if anyone wants to call in during this conversation, the call number is 347-945-5191. And next I'd like to introduce to the show Malik Zula Shabazz. Mr. Shabazz, are you with us?
Yes, I am here.
Okay. If you could, you know, introduce yourself and you being, you know, an elder to these young folks, if you can, you know, give your perspective and your experiences in terms of what your organization does and what you've been fighting, you know, most of your life, because I know that you've been in the trenches for quite some time fighting, you know, for equal rights, human rights.
Well, I can tell you this. I certainly want to commend the college students and the struggles that they go through as they are on the line, because I am not too far out of the college ranks myself as a student organizer, as a student revolutionary, as a conscious organizer on the campus of Howard University. As I graduated there in 1995 and headed several student organizations in the Black Conscious and Black Nationalist movement, I know the struggles that go on at the University of Maryland and at Georgetown and at white college campuses all over America, where there's black students there and trying to establish their identity and learn and grow in life, and are confronted with a white racist environment in a multifaceted ways. I was there as a college student at the University of Maryland, and I understand the struggles you're going through with the Dr. Cornell now in the Cultural Center. I followed some of that as I practiced law in Washington, D.C., but I could recount the days at the University of Maryland when they wanted to bring Minister Louis Farrakhan to the campus, and there was intense, strong opposition from the Zionist camp at the University of Maryland, to the degree that when I was a student there heading the Progressive Student Movement, later to be known as Unity Nation, we took a team of students out to defend the black students at the University of Maryland, and they turned out over 2,000 Zionists on the side of the at the building in a massive demonstration but there were 16,000 blacks that came out to hear Louis Farrakhan. They couldn't even sell enough tickets. But then they used all kind of illegal tactics, the campus police, the campus and the state police and stormtroopers. They made Louis Farrakhan, they wouldn't even let him come to the building. I'm talking about on the University of Maryland. They wouldn't even let the man that brought the Million Man March, they wouldn't even let him drive to the building. They made him park 100 feet away from the building. But luckily he had about 500 Fruit of Islam that made a human wall from the building all the way out to where all these police and madness and protesters, and he had to come through a human wall of FOI. I've been on the campus of Georgetown University and spoken there with my mentor, Dr. Khalid Abdul Muhammad, who I had speak there. I used to arrange speaking engagements like I speak now on college campuses, and we encountered intense racism. And they come out in the newspapers and in other areas and students and student parties, and they make fun of and harass black students all the time, I must bear witness. So as I just open up, I want to say I'm familiar with this, even from the perspective as a lecturer. I also, after graduating Howard School of Law and going through an intense struggle there of my own, even though I was on a black college campus, going through a war there over ideas, a war with, for lack of a better word, Uncle Tom's on the college campus at a black college that didn't want a message of black power coming through, and went through my own struggles and trials and tribulations. But I came out to form Black Lawyers for Justice. And now on behalf of the new Black Panther Party and Black Lawyers for Justice, I traveled to just recently, Carnegie Mellon University, Northern Illinois University was where I've spoken at, Rhode Island University, colleges in New York and in New Jersey. I spoke on a college campus in Southern Illinois just recently where they wouldn't even let me have, they were so racist as I capped this. It was so racist that the black college students, they wouldn't even let, they first of all, they just wanted to deny the whole lecture, period. They had the black student fund, so they couldn't touch their ability to do the event. But then they wouldn't even let me have security on stage. I'm talking about all white campus. My security couldn't come with me. It was all in the newspaper every day about how they were trying to stop the event. When I came to the lecture, it was 600 whites and about 50 blacks, and I talked straight up to the whites like I did to the blacks, but they wouldn't let me have any security. They had all these racist, I believe, Ku Klux Klan security that surrounded me. The rest of the team of the Black Panther Party were banned from coming to the campus, or they would cancel the lecture. They wouldn't let the tape come out. I went to Carnegie Mellon University, where they cut the funds, cut the budget for me to come to speak. Because they didn't want to, they wanted to control the message of the black college students. But the students, led by a young student like these student activists here named Kiera Wright, now Sister Asale, who's in the new Black Panther Party, stood up and we held a lecture anyway. And it was 500 on the inside, another 500 on the outside, and we woke that campus up. But it was struggle. It was in the same environment these students are facing, where they're trying to whitewash these campuses and control the black students. So I just want to bear witness through my own struggles as a student activist, student revolutionary, student leader, and as a now one who is fighting the liberation struggle on the front lines and also speaking out on these college campuses. These students deserve support because they go through hell.
Right. Thank you. Thank you so much, brother, for that opening. Janelle, yeah. I wanted to kind of swing the tide to you, and I think it's great that we have someone like Malik Zula Shabazz on the program right now, who is an attorney, because he represents so many different perspectives, and the fact that he's been through these kind of battles and continues to see these battles as he travels across the country speaking on campuses, and there's a lot of opposition to his message being put out there by the so-called dominant hegemony on these campuses, which is also representative of the dominant hegemony, you know, in America. How is this this incident, what you've been going through since you've been a freshman at Georgetown, Janelle, how has that shaped, you know, your framework of of not just your experience at Georgetown, but also your experience as a black person in America, and what, you know, what are the steps that are, you know, that are you guys taking right now? Because I think that Mr. Shabazz brings up a good point, because, you know, throughout what he was talking about solidarity, how so many people rallied around one another for a common cause. And obviously, yeah, you have some, you know, some provocateurs, you know, those I would say traitors that are always going to be in existence. But by and large, there was a lot of solidarity. So how has this defined you and shaped your kind of perceptions about your campus as well as America in general?
Well, you know, it's kind of made me cynical, and I think that's really sad, especially that, you know, I'm pretty young. It's made me cynical, I think, generally for the state of race relations, and for me personally, a lot of people have, when I get to know people, they have to, in my mind, I assume people to be racist, like, to be quite honest, or to kind of, you know, harbor some bigotry and some prejudice. And so when I get to know people, in my mind, people kind of have to prove themselves to be otherwise, because being at a school that I'm at has sort of has made me cynical and very jaded in that regard. But just generally, and also it's really interesting to see kind of how this goes hand in hand with other types of bigotry. So instances of xenophobia, sexism, and homophobia and different stuff like that has sort of happened in tandem with, you know, very blatant instances of racism. And so there is a community of people that actively fights this at my school, sort of more the progressive and sort of activist groups on campus. We actively fight this on campus. Anytime stuff like this happens, we're contacting the media, or we're organizing events, or trying to make sure the administration speaks out against it. So sort of, you know, actively fighting it and not let people rest on laurels that sort of perpetuate the sort of bigotry that I'm talking about. And so something that we're trying to do now to make the campus more inclusive is trying to create different ethnic studies programs. We have an African-American studies program, but it's not endowed with a chair. It's not necessary. It's not given the funding that other studies programs are given. So we're trying to create a sustainable African-American studies program, and we're also trying to create an Asian-American and a Latino studies program, so that ethnic studies and knowledge around different ethnicities in America specifically is given the academic legitimacy that it deserves, at least in this context, not that it needs to be given the legitimacy by an institution of higher power, but that people should be learning about Latinos, Asian Americans, African Americans, et cetera. So that's one of the things that we're trying to do that is a little bit proactive in sort of making sure that the academic community is inclusive, but the community as a whole.
All right. Thank you so much. And Jazz, the quick question I want to ask you is, I was pleased, you know, the other day to find out that you and Ms. Janelle Brown actually knew each other, because she came out to support the students at Maryland, despite the fact that she's a student at Georgetown University. She came out to your campus and participated in one of the student rallies that you guys have had, and you guys have kind of been in contact, which brings up, you know, the solidarity theme again. What and I know that you guys had a meeting yesterday, Jazz, with some of your cohorts who are part of an organization called STARE, and maybe you can talk about that. What are your current plans right now to continue to put pressure on the administration at University of Maryland College Park to fight for the reinstatement of Dr. Black and Dr. Wisdom, but also, you know, even bigger than that is to fight for you know, the Black Studies Department on campus, which I know they're trying to collapse and to put, you know, to break it up and put it under one roof with LGBT studies as well as American studies as well as women's studies, which takes away the identity of each of those departments. What do you guys have planned, and how has, you know, your relationship with Janelle Brown at Georgetown, how has that strengthened your efforts and you know, and also you know, what plans do you have to kind of lend a hand to the students at Georgetown in the future?
Good point. We were talking about this last night. We had a potluck, and we're planning an escalation plan for next semester, primarily because if anyone's been following University Room this past semester, we took for the bulk of that semester since November 4th when we had our rally and 600 people came out, a more of a diplomatic approach. We went to forums, we sat down, we talked with people, yada, yada. You know, we extended our hand to have that as a disclaimer because I already knew that they would not care or even help us in our efforts. You know, to first sat down with them, we gave them three demands, and honestly, they weren't steep or hard or anything. First demand was the reinstatement of Dr. Black because of what he's done at the university. You know, all forms of diversity would not be there if not for this man. You know, all forms of, like, intellectual thought outside of, like, mainstream white, upper-middle-class, conservative Christian or Jewish, whatever, would not be present without him. The second demand was that full budget transparency so that the students can know where our money is going. You know, that's our tuition is 52% of the school's budget. You know what I mean? I think we have a say in what goes and what doesn't. The third thing was a moratoria on all freezing and firing until we get this, you know, which still hasn't occurred. So because of that, starting day one, we're planning on pushing up the heat on, like, all elements in regards to, like, media and some other direct action tactics. I'm kind of, like, cautious about saying it, though. I don't want them to be prepared. But, yeah, in regards to, like, Georgetown, George Washington, Howard, Bowie, and the rest of them, I have to apologize to Janelle because I wanted to utilize like the rest of the schools more and more. I wanted to have a conference over winter break for all of us, but like Maryland got like out of control for me. so this is what I'm saying. So we can possibly get in contact. There's a mm-hmm. number of students at other schools that I've been talking to as well that want all of us to get to organize together. So maybe we can meet on another time to plan those things because through solidarity we're stronger. You know, I feel our biggest strength is our numbers because they can't take that away from us.
Right, right. And I want to swing it to Brother Shabazz. Brother Shabazz, based on your expertise, you know, your experiences, what kind of advice would you have for these young folks to, you know, to help them continue on their battle and to hopefully, you know, find some significant gains within these battles? What kind of advice would you give to them?
Well, I would say that they're on the right path in terms of building alliances with other students in the region and other student organizations from other campuses and getting them to write in their papers and getting them to take part in the activities and the organizing they're doing to try to get their demands met and to stay firm in the trenches in terms of getting the demands, the legitimate demands at both universities met, and to put all the pressure you can. They don't have the necessary advantage like we did at Howard University in 1989 because I think we may have had more numbers. It being an all-black campus, the dynamics were different. We just stormed the administration building and broke the windows in, similar to what happened in the 60s in many student struggles on different campuses. And we had to take the administration building and lock the doors. And we're in there for a week until some key demands were met. But that kind of some of that has been done. I can't say that it's confined to a black college campus because Cornell University and many other campuses, especially in the 60s and the struggle around black studies, as was remarked in the beginning, they were began on white college campuses. And so building solidarity, so I'm just saying they should consider a wide range of actions in terms of the politics and the struggle around getting the demands met and abating the chauvinism, the kind of racist chauvinism and the pushing of the black students around and to marginalizing their programs and cutting their budgets. And so they're on the right path right now. I would say that there are others. You know, I and others that I know would be willing to help. Many times, you know, I'm in connection with a wide range of leaders. I've organized with a wide range of leaders, and I go to college campuses myself to speak and to support students in various causes. And sometimes when other perspectives come to the campus, and others that I have worked with on college campuses in the civil rights community to the Nation of Islam community. When we had issues on our campus, many times we invited Minister Farrakhan to come in to address those issues. And so certainly I could say that I would be willing to come and to help any of these students in any way. I do workshops on college campuses on tactics for student revolutionaries and training for student activists and so forth. You have to be able to work your professors. Many times there are professors within these college campuses that have influence, and some of them are not afraid, and some key alliances can be made with various professors. I don't think Dr. Walters is there, but I don't know the dynamics of the staff at the University of Maryland, but I would say usually in general there are some professors that would be willing to help and to, you know, put some of their, I guess, careers on the line. You know, there is a dynamic here. Every college student that stands up for a struggle in a campus is, you know, there's pressure. There's pressure to be isolated. There's pressure that a professor may not give you a specific grade if you're considered to be a rabble-rouser. I'm familiar with these dynamics. There will be pressure from parents who may say, well, you may not want, shouldn't be involved in this. Your job is to get an education. But as you're awakening in your young life, you know that this is actually part of your mission in your life, to help defend and protect your people. And so, you know, I would say that you have to be strong in that regard. You have to go with your convictions. You have to believe in a higher power, a higher force, a higher principle of being right as a young college student, as a young student fighting these battles, to know that indeed it's not rhetoric, that God and right and your history of your people is on your side as you face these battles, and don't be turned around by those who would try to dissuade you from defending your people. So it boils down to a character question. And so, you know, there are many ways we should proceed. You have to have strong, again, you have to have strong character, strong convictions, and don't let them kowtow or bow you down with certain threats. You stand on what's right, and I've seen it over and over again. They did the same thing to me when I was a college student at Howard University. They were threatening my law degree and everything, and I really had some revolution going at Howard University, but I didn't back down. I stood on the right principles, and I passed my law, my bar exam on my first attempt. I began to form a black legal organization, Black Lawyers for Justice. I practiced law all over America, and they would tell you that you can't do it if you stand up to white people, and I will bear witness that I can testify that that's not true to our family that's here on the phone and the other black college students that are listening. And so once you stand up with strong character, strong conviction, strong principles, organize with the students in your area. Reach out to as many students as you can. Tear the blog up. Tear the internet up. They hate it when you go with clear, convincing arguments to the press and to the media. They hate the bad press, especially when it's put in a clear and professional way. And then you back yourself up with other leadership that can come in on a national level and help to support what you're doing with expertise and wisdom and teaching and guidance to the students. And then you have what you will have is about as much power as you can. Really, you have respect. You will think that the whites on the campus will turn and they will try to crush you in this racist environment. When you stand up for right, they will begin to respect you and tip your hat. Because I've been to universities where there was intense opposition from the whites to other people, that speakers that were coming. It could have been Farrakhan or Al Sharpton, or it could have been me. And at the end of the lecture, they stood in line as well as the black students to shake my hand and apologize for going along with the madness that had been going on and persecuting the black students. They apologized on behalf of Carnegie Mellon University, apologize on behalf of universities that were harassing the students. And so stand up, young students, and you will be vindicated, and you are on the right side.
That's and before you jump in, Jasmine, definitely before we get off of air, I'd like for all of you guys, you know, because Mr. Shabazz brought a ton of good points, but I definitely want folks to be able to get any contact information that you want to put out there, Mr. Shabazz, so that folks can contact you, so these students can contact you, and any other students that are listening right now can contact you, and as well as the student leaders, you guys can give your email addresses out. So if there's people that are listening right now that are in solidarity with you and they want to do something from wherever they are in this country to help out. And speaking of that, we have just before you comment, Jazz, we have a caller from Louisiana. So Louisiana, you're on the line. Can you hear me? Do you have a question or comment?
Yes. Peace and blessings, everyone. Happy New Year. No, I was just listening to the inspiring lecture Dr. Shabazz was giving.
Right.
And all the students, I'm inspired by their work and their struggle in the universities.
Right. Thank you. And you're calling from Louisiana?
Yes.
All right. Thank you. I'm glad that you called in. And these students will be giving their email addresses out, you know, at the close of the show in about, you know, about 15 minutes so that you can, you know, get their information and contact them and continue to support them in whatever way you can, as well as Mr. Shabazz will be giving his information out as well. So thank you for calling in. Appreciate your words.
Thank y'all.
Jazz, what were you going to say?
I had a question for Mr. Shabazz in regards of linking up with the faculty because at the close of this past semester, you know, I went to, with Solomon and a number of other organizers at the school, they went to an emergency meeting held by faculty and staff, and I was just, I sat in the back, we sat in the back, kind of together on purpose, you know, observe the faculty members there, their responses, who we could tell were more willing to come out and say, because, like, as a student, there's information I just don't have, and no matter how hard I pry, I'm only going to get it if I get it from administration or through the faculty, you know. And a lot of people there were very scared, like, they were moving around their seats, they were looking around to see who was looking at them and who was speaking. You know, the dean of one of the colleges pretty much sneered me and, like, stared at me as I walked from speaking, showing solidarity to the faculty, to me sitting down, as if, like, he wanted to kill me or something, you know? And I was just like, I really want to know how we can build those bonds even more so, because I have a list of faculty that has already shown that they support us and are in solidarity with us, and whatever we need, they will aid us. But how to expand that, you know? Because even regardless of the student trying to organize at a predominantly white institution, you know, there's but so many classes that I know I can go into teachers and have them, and the teachers see more students than even we do. You know, they have their classes and they teach them, and we can get them to push our information or at least let them know what's going on or events or whatever. You know, that would be a greater help because I only see so many students every day. So how did you do that, Howard?
Well, I would say that I would like to take some time with you because it will take, we're in the same area. At some point, I'm going to give out the number to the to my law office as well as the number to the new Black Panther Party. And then we can sit and we can talk about how to develop those strategies. In a short word, many of those relationships will have to be built one-on-one. They will not be built in those big meetings because, again, these professors, depending on their status, some are tenured, some are non-tenured. A tenured professor, according to what I've learned, will tend to be stronger, but that's not always the case. Some non-tenured professors, especially when you're standing up for such, having, you know, advisors, the advisors that look out for your interest and things that have already been decided in the past, Black studies and things like that, are usually issues that tenured and well as non-tenured professors will stand behind you with. But you should try to probably develop those relationships one-on-one. Have you been able to sit with some of these professors one-on-one who support you, or how have you? I would have to maybe meet with you or sit down with you to see what you have done, and we could plot some further strategies. But I see some fertile ground in that area for you and the issues that you stand on. You know, and the professors, I mean, to be honest, as you said, some of them were looking around and so forth because they're victims of intimidation as well. They have to keep their jobs as well. But some of them have such good standing and stature at these universities that they will stand up for the students. And so that's what I would, that's my general advice to you, as well as an offer that we sit down or have a chance to at least talk on the telephone to try to develop some further strategies, because, you know, they may be listening right now for all what we know, you know, trying to figure out what's going on. You know, both of these cases have been in the news. I followed them from Washington, D.C., where I am, and so I'm familiar with what you're going through.
All right. I'd be more than willing to meet with you.
That's good. Yeah, all right. And we'll definitely get that information out there. Janelle, how can people that are listening right now, how can they, you know, what things can you see, outsiders like myself, Mr. Shabazz, and whoever is listening right now, what are some of the things that you could use outsiders' help on?
I think that if there's any possible escalation, just support in terms of if we have possible petitions or when we have events on our campus, that I think would be the best possible way of support. And you can always just email naacp@georgetown.edu and you'll get a prompt response about any upcoming events or escalations we have. But just getting in contact with us and seeing where your support best lies, I think, is the best way.
Okay, and since you alluded to that, I guess that's a good segue. How can folks get in contact with you? I guess could you repeat that email address again?
Okay, well, the chapter's email address is naacp@georgetown.edu, but I'll definitely give out my own email address. My name is kind of has a complicated spelling, so it's spelled JHEANELLE. .brown@gmail.com. Again, that's JHEANELLE.brown@gmail.com. That's my personal email address. If you need anything, just get in contact with me.
She could definitely use your support. As I've recently learned, I'm going to do everything I can do to help out because she's so outspoken on campus. She's received a lot of hate-related emails and so forth, and so has her organization, you know. So herself and her organization and other black students on campus have been receiving a lot of anonymous, you know, hate because, as you know, most of those cowards like to operate from behind the veil of the Internet. So anything that we can do to help, you know, please continue to call upon us. And Jazz, what is your organization? I believe your organization has a website now. What does STAIR stand for? And what's your email address? How can they get in contact with you?
Oh, yeah. STAIR doesn't have an email address yet. We do have a, we don't have an internet. So we have an email address. It's STAIR as STARE_UMD@gmail.com. And my email is jazzmlewis@gmail.com.
Okay, so that's Jazz as in the music, M as in Mary, Lewis@gmail.com. Okay. And Brother Shabazz, if you could give out your information in terms of your law office as well as the New Black Panther Party's information.
Yes, I want to and to say that for everyone that may listen to this broadcast, that know me, Attorney Malik Zulu Shabazz, or affiliated or and support in any way the New Black Panther Party or Black Lawyers for Justice, to support these students, support Jazz, support the struggle at Georgetown University, the NAACP, and the battles that they are going through, email and call and follow up and do the things that we do and what the students ask you to do. Do what they ask you to do and to do it expeditiously. My number that I can be reached at a phone number, especially to the student leaders in general that will hear this message, is area code 202 at my law office or the Office of Black Lawyers for Justice. It's area code 202-772-3118. 202-772-3118. The phone number to the national headquarters of the New Black Panther Party for those and those that have been emailing or want to, and the students that want to contact the New Black Panther Party, 202-397-4577, 202-397-4577. The website for the party is www.newblackpanther.com. Newblackpanther.com is the website. And the email to the party is NBPPHQ, like headquarters, N as in national, NBPPHQ at yahoo.com. Those are my contacts. And I get one more, just me, attorney Malik Shabazz, for my law practice. The email is ShabazzLawOffice. At yahoo.com. That's very straightforward. Shabazz Law Office at yahoo.com. Those are how you reach me, the numbers. That's how you reach the party. And again, support the student struggles wherever you are and these specific student struggles for those that know me that are listening in right now. These students deserve support. I am taught that whatever kind of student activist and the struggles and experiences you go through as a student, that will shape the character and the kind of person and leader you are later in life. And these battles that they're going through with racism will mold these young students into our future leaders. And black lawyers and professionals and those that are listening on the phone, you owe a debt. You owe a debt to those that went before you and struggled like these young students. So you got to pay the debt back. And these students are struggling the way those went struggled in the 60s to make a better way for the black professional today.
That's right. And I couldn't have said any better. That's very profound words. And so, you know, if there's students listening out there, please definitely heed his advice and reach out to Brother Malik Zulu Shabazz in any way, shape, form, or fashion. It's not every day where you have committed professionals who have been through the ranks who are willing to put themselves out there to reach back and to immerse themselves in these ongoing battles that are going on in pretty much every corner of these artificial borders called America. And so I really appreciate Brother Shabazz for joining us today. Any last words from the two student leaders before we adjourn?
Jazz? I guess we'd love to have your support at Georgetown, and I think Jazz would probably say the same thing, but that we definitely need support just to create more inclusive environments and fight for what we believe in. So we put out our contact information, so we'd love any support that anyone listening could offer.
If there are any other student leaders listening or people with any form of like media contact or anything like that, please contact me and Janelle. We both would need that information key. And for any student leaders to contact us so we can get planning on this conference. Thank you very much.
That's right, because you're planning a conference in late January, or?
Yes, well, the organizers at Maryland are having a conference to finalize our the stuff we're doing, but it's open to other student leaders at other schools that want to help us plan or even mimic what we're doing, or we can play off each other in regards to the things. On March 4th, 2010, is National Demonstration Day that a bunch of organizers across the country have gotten, a bunch of student organizers across the country have agreed to do stuff. And this is one of the things we're going to be planning leading up to March 4th and what we're going to do there every day, every week, getting more intense until our things are met, you know. And if we're all doing it at the same time, it makes everyone's job so much more easier.
All right. Okay. That's good information. That's March 4th, 2010, National Demonstration Day. And your conference that's coming up soon is open to other student leaders as well as, I'm assuming, community members, community activists of all ages?
Yes.
Okay. That's, all right. Definitely.
It'll be January 15th and 16th at Nimbaru Cultural Center.
Okay. Contact Jazz for that information. That's the Nimbaru Cultural Center, which is the Black Cultural Center on the campus of University of Maryland, right next to the Stamp Student Union. So, you know, we're looking forward to that. We'll post this on the website when we get this information solidified. But I want to, you know, on behalf of Your World News, I want to thank our guest, Janelle Brown, president of the NAACP chapter at Georgetown University. Thank her for all her work and just, you know, all the strength that she has. And you're not going in this alone, Janelle. You know, we got
thank
your
you.
Back. I have your back 100%, 100%. And the same
thank
thing
you.
With Jazz. Not a problem, not a problem. And Jazz, the same thing with you. And you know that I have your back and so many other community activists, as well as like brothers like Malik Jewel Shabazz, we have your back as well. And you know, like Brother Shabazz said before, I mean, this is we owe, you know, this is our debt to pay back to those elders that came before us that fought, you know, 40 something years ago for Black cultural centers, for Black studies departments, you know, across campus, and as well as for our African ancestors who shed blood so that, you know, we could have the opportunities and the tools that we have right now to continue to fight, you know, because the battle is not over until we have complete liberation and complete freedom and complete equality, you know, across the board, you know. And so those battles that they fought on behalf of us made it a little bit easier for us to fight. So we have to use those. We can't hide under rocks and hide behind computer screens. We got to get out in the streets and work towards them. So thank you all, and thank you, Brother Shabazz, for calling in. You know, this the show is all of you guys' platform. Anytime that you guys want to come on Your World News and have a dialogue about anything, you know, just reach out. You have my information. It's Your World News Blog Talk Radio. So blogtalkradio.com/your-world-news. And so I thank all three of you guys for coming on the
You've
show today.
Thank you for having us. You've been a great host.
Brother. Appreciate it, brother, in solidarity. And right now we're going to be taken out by a non-corporate rap group that you're not going to hear on the corporate media, the corporate radio, and that's Lone Catalyst. It was a song called Red, Black, and Green. And when you listen to the words, this is exactly what they don't want you to hear, because this is the type of liberating music that incites and empowers the masses. So until next time, this is Solomon Kamajan for Your World News.
I'd like to say that we're one tonight. Let us be one in the future. Power to all of the people.
It goes red, black, and green. Flag on the back of my whip, rolling so clean, bossing Public Enemy, X-Clan and WA, saying fuck the police like Dr. Dre, feel like revolutionaries, fighting the system, writing the dissim, cause one day I was enlightened by wisdom, saw the world for what it's worth, and my life on this earth, and realized the humble path and took strides on it first, but soon all the scenery got trifling at worst, I'm living in the land that got no light for the first, original man, that's why we get treated like criminals, fam, 50s posted on our block like Sentinel Stand, see they give us all the bull. Shit with minimal land. Them will suck up all our shit like they got tentacles. Damn, yo, that's a capitalist. Nothing but facts that I kick. System built on our back while master cracked the whip. I'm just an average black man here in USA. Just being that a nigga feel like he need 2 SKs. Cause I seen it all before Diallo to Johnny Gammy. No justice, no peace, all the words just up and vanish.
We need red, black, and green. Dashikis, low shades, and guns with magazines. Fisted in here like Giancarlo and Tommy Smith. The ones who oppress are the ones I strongly disagree. We need red, black, and green. Families all united, blowouts with Apple Sheen. Fisted in here like Geronimo Pratt. The ones who oppress are the ones I'm going next.
Hey yo, time stay. 24/7, ask myself, Jay Sands, you want money or heaven? But do I gotta stop rhyming like mates to show faith? Be at church every Sunday morning with no haste. I know folk who never miss and live life just so fake. Most time you never see me greasing before grace. You wanna preach, I wanna freak over beats and showcase. Talent plus some issues that plague the whole race. I have a voice and I'm using it.
The problem is abusing it. How I'm gonna flow about life and stay confusing it? Trying to paint the picture that the record man sell. Man, I'm trying to paint the picture so the pecker can tell that Huey Newton, Bobby Seale didn't waste their time. Revolution's the solution for our fate defined. To the east, my brother, on the Black Star Line. Any nigga disagreeing about these facts are blind. Be in the hood every day, see the games that they play. The only reason men make lies to see who obey, cause everyone breaks them. Every race, every day, say kids in the burbs don't sniff and puff hay. With blacks it's a crime, with whites it's a problem, but see it's all the same and the cycle just stay revolving.
So we red, black, and green. Dashikis, low shades, and guns with magazines. Fists in the air like Stokely and rap rhymes.
Yeah.
The lies and deceits, we got the fucking bounce. So we need red, black, and green. Families all united for whites with Afro-Sheen. Fists in the air like El Haj, Malisha Bass. The last
Hey yo, my thoughts burn like Mississippi when I'm tippy. Paranoid, smoking 50 with my nigga Picky. Talking about the devil and how he's so tricky. Got us caught for water these days, a buck 60. New world agenda, nothing for free. Sooner or later, you gon' have to pay for air that you breathe. Are we too far gone? I really don't know. It'd be a shame if we destroyed this planet all for the dough. Plus the babies, we need to tell them now. What, where, why, when, and how. They don't respect us, cause we don't respect ourselves. We'd rather diss our own brothers before we let affect our wealth. I give any black man the benefit of a doubt, cause none of us are innocent. So I shout, red, black, and green, so we know where we came from and know what we've seen. And realize when we're divided, we are the worst. And realize when we're united, we are the first. So we got red, black, and green. Dashikis, low shades, and guns with magazines. Fists in the air like Omia Abdul-Jabbar. The ones who oppress are the ones that lead the fall. So we got red.